I'm John.
And I'm Ron.
And I'm Jason. And this is Digital Divination on the No Direction Network.
We are back for episode 148 of Digital Divination.
I'm not going to
do the countdown. No, neither of you did it. I was about to do it.
No, we could just move on to the content of our show. On.
Exactly. So just last week, we recorded a few more episodes of Murder in Metal City for Intrepid Heroes, and the episode I think that just recently premiered. Tell me if I'm wrong, John. Is it the because tomorrow is the combat one?
Oh no!
That one already go.
That one already went.
That one already. So we had a long sort of like combat, and it was sort of one of the bigger combats of the. We had one smaller one earlier in the season. We had a long one, but then the ones we recorded are pretty recently. This is going to be a small spoiler, I guess. We're just more, you know, investigative. Which is part of the genre, of course, more role playing, I would say light even on the skill checks. And this is basically, a first level adventure. And I wanted to ask the two of you a little bit about first level adventures and the balance between when do you do the combats? When do you rely more on investigative, since, first level characters tend to be a little squishier in level based systems, especially like Starfinder, Do you rely more on narrative and whatnot to get you through to second, third level? Or do you just, lean into it, depending on, what's going on? Lean into the combat, lean into, it's a combat game that has combat in it. Why not do that? Ron, you've written and developed a lot of adventures. John, you've run tons of society stuff and probably written a few early level adventures yourself.
Yeah.
So let's talk about that. I brought this topic to the group, and I want to hear your opinions, and I'm sure so will our listeners. So Ron, let's start with you.
Okay. I have opinions.
I'd like to hear them.
And my opinion is this. If you're putting together a level one adventure for a group of your friends who are starting a new campaign together, you know the system, you know the game, you're just starting over with a brand new story, take all that I'm about to say and ignore it. Fast forward through what I'm about to say. But if you are otherwise running a first level adventure for a group of people who are new to play together, especially if they're new to the game or for any kind of publication, you have a high likelihood that somebody is coming to your game without knowledge about how the game works. And in that case, the level one adventure must walk them through some of the specifics of the game without losing them, because it is very easy to lose players of level one characters right out of the gate with a fight that's too hard, with some sort of skill subsystem that is incredibly nuanced or complex or something like that. One of the best, and it's not Pathfinder or Starfinder, but one of the best examples of this I've ever seen is the Fantasy Flight Games Edge of the Empire Star Wars system. Beginner box games start with, you go into a cantina in a hive of scum and villainy, and then you've got to make some checks, right? So it's telling you, here are some skill checks, and it's giving you, I think there are Gamma Marine guards there or somebody. Somebody that's clearly telegraphed as, you don't want to fight them. You want to trick them or get around them. And so it starts with some skill checks. Then it does some role playing, and then stormtroopers come in, and then there's a fight, and then you get on your ship and you leave, right? What it does is it walks you through what you're going to need to know to play the game. And I think even for people who are experienced, first level is a good opportunity to do that. Because they're being introduced to a brand new character. Let's see how my skill checks work. How do I want to embody this character? Let's do some of the role playing, maybe some of the investigation, like Murder in Metal City, and then definitely have some sort of fight. I don't think you should just sort of role play or hand wave through the first level. I think you should try to hit all those things, and roughly in that order, I think is good. I've had a lot of success. One of my best sort of recent successes with that is I've had some new level one characters starting out with the same story as Stolen Fate. It's a Pathfinder AP that is for higher level, but it's easy to pitch to intro, where you've got to initially find the location of the first encounter, deal with the fact that you've got a bunch of other people, the other PCs who've kind of shown up at the same time, also with their own weird backgrounds, a little bit of role playing, figure out how to get into the place because it's locked or whatever. And then, oh, there's a fight, right? So it's kind of skills and role play and then a fight, all in the course of like first level character kind of stuff. After that is a pretty lengthy investigation that kind of hits several different points. But each one of those is some role playing and some skill checks and some piecing things together, right? So I find that to be really useful for a level one experience because it does some skills, some role play, and then a fight, and then more structured investigation. I can also tell you how it is maybe not the best way to do it. And this is a story about a moose. The very first encounter of the quest for the quest frozen, for the frozen flame. The very first fight is by the numbers an appropriate encounter. It is a moderate encounter for level one characters to fight a single level three creature. And in this case, it is a moose. I have to admit, even doing my research, I learned, wow, a moose is not an animal that any reasonable person wants to tangle with. They're way bigger and way tougher and way more harm-inducing than you can imagine. Nevertheless, our first encounter in that AP is with a moose. You've got some opportunities to like slow it down or try to corral it or trap it. But none of the things you can do to prepare for the fight with the moose actually reduce the moose's combat effectiveness in a way that totally TPKs level one characters. So that does it maybe not right. Do not have your welcome to this game. Here is a fight against a level three foe. Good luck.
Yeah.
It will end poorly. Maybe that kind of sets the tone for the gritty survivalist nature of Quest for the Frozen Flame, but I don't know that I would do it that way again.
Yeah, fair. I want to like interrogate some of that a little bit. So, okay. You talked a little bit about like how first level adventures can be, you know, introductions to systems and whatnot. And I know you said if you've got people who are familiar with it, whatever. But like, how many times would you is there a template for, you know, our, you know, Paizo stuff? Like, do you want to do that like that same way every single time? Even because our first level adventures are going to be for a mix of people, right? Like, there are people starting new campaigns who have played the game a bunch, and for people who are getting the first campaign. So, do you ever see like any benefit to like a little mixing it up here and there just for like, for the veterans to come in with, like, not necessarily for a moose fight, but like, you know, hey, this starts off in Meteor S. Your pirate ship is sinking. Oh no, you know, make some skill checks or fight a shark or something like that. You know, weak shark. And then get into the sort of more, you know, oh, now who's here's you are, you wash up on the beach and yada, yada, you know, so forth. And here's where the adventure comes in. Like, sometimes it's fun to kind of start with something very exciting, if not necessarily a fight, but something that is bam, you know.
Oh, absolutely. I think yes. I think absolutely. I think starting things in media res is always kind of fun, and especially starting things in media res with a mob of creatures is kind of fun too. Like, there are a number, whatever the foe is, suddenly there's a lot of them. You guys got to deal with it, and people are suddenly realizing, oh, well, I've got this cantrip that can get more than one target, or, I've got, you know, this ability to, it's going to totally overwhelm them or stand my ground or whatever. Anyway, the important thing I said yes earlier. I said skill checks and maybe some role playing and then a fight, and you said, could you mix it up, could you start with a fight? The answer is yes. I really think that you should not, if to the extent there's a should not, it's do not start with lengthy or extensive role playing people focus that the game has begun when they have the tactile experience of picking up dice and rolling them on the table, or finding the dice drop down and clicking on the dice thing. Yeah, yeah. And watching the dice go across the board. That is kind of an understated, we are now playing a game thing that kicks off, in this case, not only the session, but the entire campaign that's starting at level one. So does a fight do that? Yes, absolutely it does.
Well, sure. Yeah. I always find that, like, when I'm setting something up, that is, you know, either running something pre-written or, you know, running something for myself, you know, that I'm making up, is that that opening few minutes is always like a really difficult to kind of grasp. True to, like you said, you don't want to start with a lengthy role playing because it kind of has a lot of air in it. People aren't sure where their characters are anyway, that sort of thing. But I also like to kind of, you know, set the tone of what's going on, or set the scene of how things are going and who are you. Tell me what your character looks like and that kind of stuff. To be perfectly honest, that's not just for like first level play, but that's just like anytime you're starting a campaign with new characters, that is the toughest thing possible. Basically it's the toughest thing to really get right. And I don't think, like, I'm not sure I've ever have gotten it like fully 100% correct, you know, in a way that feels good and not necessarily as people, things a little awkward. And even in your home game and things get a little, you know, things could be a little awkward, whatever. It's fine.
Right.
But like, it's always difficult to kind of get to get the tone right. John, so, you know, you run a lot of like this sort of thing, and, you know, people coming in with their society characters are not necessarily going to be sitting down and playing with people they're going to be playing with for the next year and a half or what have you, or 12 sessions or whatever it is, right? How do you have any tips on like, yeah, and this is, I guess, it's not even necessarily for first level characters, but people who are coming in first level characters might be new to society as well. Any tips on like how to like help them sort of like figure things out, what's going on, talk to the other players more, you know, make everyone kind of like know who everyone is at the table, that kind of stuff.
Yeah, I mean, for society play, one of the things that I've run a couple hundred, you know, tables of society and played another couple hundred tables. And I mean, when I'm running, I always have everybody go around the table, introduce themselves and kind of where they're from. If it's online, especially when we were online before, it's always neat to hear where people are playing from. Like, I have one fella who's a pilot. And he would regularly be in my online games. And then I met him for the first time in person at Gen Con this past year. But it would be, oh, yeah, this is so-and-so. His online name is Nomadical, because he's a nomad, right? Nomadical.
Sure.
Where are you at now? Oh, he's in Singapore. Or he's in Chicago. He's in North Carolina. You know, it's like playing in a hotel, you know. So anyway, so it's kind of, it was always kind of fun, you know, to learn their name and kind of where they're from. That's just as a person intro.
Icebreaker.
Icebreaker with that. And then you'd always come up with the usual, okay, so you've kind of met together or whatever place you are, kind of describe your characters. It's similar, like we had a game today at my house, and my daughter joined in with us. And so Ron, who was the GM, had everybody describe their physical descriptions to her and for her. And the funny thing is, you know, we've been playing this for a year and everybody kind of forgot how they described their characters, you know, because we're just kind of used to playing. So those are kind of standard things. And, but when we're playing a new scenario and starting off a new adventure, you know, you were talking about kind of this contrast of skill checks, role play, and combat. In society, it almost always starts off with skill checks. It's like every single adventure has you making a diplomacy or society check to gather information about whatever you're
doing. Or,
you know. Yeah, what do you know? Yeah.
Yeah, you know. And I actually don't like that kind of rote, that this is how it always goes, but it seems like this is how it always goes. With other adventures, you know, oftentimes you'll have some role play. I was just trying to figure out an adventure that I started, that I had played or run, that started off with a combat. And it was actually Horizons of the Vast. The very first thing you do is you land on the planet, and as you open the doors, you get attacked. And so there's a combat as soon as you get on the planet. But it's a relatively low level combat. So I think a good way to get to kickstart an adventure is with a trivial or low difficulty combat to get everybody rolling, get everybody looking at your character sheets, especially at high levels where people are saying, oh, I forget I have these bazillion different skills because I haven't played this character for a while, or you know, whatever it is, I got so much. To have something like that to kick it off, and then introduce, you know, role play and skill checks and things like that.
There is a organized play, I want to say Living Greyhawk scenario, and I don't remember whether I might have actually even written this, so apologies for inflicting it on people. The first thing that the way this starts is you're gathered together in like a city square or something like that. And an errant wizard casts a spell, not fireball, not some part, casts some sort of area effect spell that catches all of you in it. So you guys are traveling together. Everybody make a saving throw. You start by taking damage, and then that propels the plot, right? Because this person was where he wasn't supposed to be, and the organization, which normally wouldn't have anything to do with you, is apologetic because they've got to heal you up. And, oh, well, it turns out we've got this problem. Mm. If you don't mind, you can look into it. We'd pay you more than we otherwise would because of our errant mage's accidental thing. So it propelled that. But the fact that the first thing you're doing is making a saving throw or taking damage was really arresting for a lot of people.
That's pretty good. Cool.
Yeah, what about you, Jason? So, like, you're running Murder in Metal City, which is a relatively long adventure, but it's all at level one.
Yes. I mean, yeah, it has some, you know, it's meant to all be level one. It's meant to be a complete story within level one. So there's no necessarily, I was going to talk about this, transition, talking about how there's no getting to level two, and there's no, as a pre-written adventure, you don't need to get enough XP to get to level two. So there's not necessarily, oh, the story XP is given out for investigating this, and you need to have X number of fights to kind of get up to this, level. That's always that's always a tricky part in any writing any of these things to choose, getting the XP to get to the next level. Sometimes you gotta like put some stuff in there that's kind of like, oh, maybe this is a little bit of filler, whatever. Whereas Murder in the Middle City doesn't care about that exactly, and that's that's kind of freeing in a lot of ways too, because you can just sort of sit back and let it happen. You can also kind of do the same thing with just milestone leveling, of course, right? Like if you are playing a game that has levels and has XP, you can be like, I'll tell you when you get to the next level, don't worry about it. And then you can kind of not worry about all having every single of the fights if it's pre-run adventure. We don't need to do that, or just sort of sitting back and letting the players kind of decide, oh, we want to talk about this, let's go here and do this play. Like at the end, again, that's too much of a spoiler, but it's like, oh, you guys had a choice at the end of that last recording. It was like, are you going to just wait till the next day when this is happening, or do you want to go to this other place? And that's great, because it doesn't really, because it's all at level one, there's not going to be more of a challenge going to one place or the other. So you can kind of do a little bit more sandbox stuff, right? But then again, like in a lot of pre-written adventures with the chapter is all one level, you can have different, you can kind of like go ping ponging from page 3 to page 8 to then back to page 7, that kind of stuff can ping pong around if the adventure is written that way.
Well, and there's some grouping like that. We're very intentional in one of the adventure paths, Strength of Thousands. You get to level 5, and then the stuff you do at level 5 and at level 6 is two levels worth of stuff. But it's all roughly of the same difficulty, because in the game, when you get to level 5, that's when you're getting a bunch of ability boosts. Then that is a big power up for your character. But at level 6, you're not getting as much of a boost. You'll get another class feat, sure, and obviously more hit points and the like. But for the most part, the difficulties are really similar. They're much. The jump from 4 to 5 is very big. The jump from 5 to 6 is not as big. And so having a bunch of stuff happen at 4 to five and six, and then let you skip around, just like you were saying, means that it can be even longer than you could for Murder in Metal City. Now, I also, I can't ask this question without admitting that I'm a terrible friend and have not yet listened to any of Murder in Metal City.
That's fine.
But what is the, what's the first time dice hit the table in that? How soon after kind of intro text or whatever does that happen?
And as it's written, I can't quite remember. I think it's, you know, you sort of introduce everyone, they show up, you know, everyone's invited to the same dinner. Everyone comes to the dinner and there's some, you know, we had basically sort of introductions of who was going on. And I think someone at some point wanted to know something. Mm-hmm. Oh, what do I know about this? It might have even been you, John. It was like, let me, so you might have knowing something about like, hey, you know, what do I know about this? And maybe there's in the adventure itself is written to be like, oh, we want to ask a question about somebody, you know, okay. We don't know where's our host. Oh, let's talk to the bartender or whatever. And then there's some, maybe a diplomacy check there or what have you. But I don't remember exactly specifically what ours was.
It's pretty early on, but it's player driven. It's a lot like,
yes, it was player driven.
You know, I'm running Daggerheart on Tuesdays, and that is like a completely player-driven narrative, you know? And it seems like a lot of the stuff in Murder in Metal City is like, okay, what do you players want to do? And then based on that, maybe there's roles to be made. It's mm-hmm. I don't feel like I'm being railroaded at all compared to like society adventure is much tighter. And it's like, it's got to go from 1, 2 to 3 usually. So it's being pushed along by dice rolling often.
Right. Yeah. You know, there's like a few places where something happens, right? Like without spoiling it, you know, hey, this boom. Yeah. Essentially the gunshot goes off and then it's chase the thing that shot you because, you know, like sort of what you're saying, Ron, it's not that anyone took damage, but it's like, you're all, have an impetus to do the next thing because something exciting has just happened.
An inciting event has occurred.
There was a thing, and I think it was Raymond Chandler. This is sort of related to the sort of noirness. May has always said that, like, when he was writing, if he didn't know what to write next, you're writing
two guys with guns.
Two guys with guns should burst in the door. Exactly. Yeah. It's something that I think about like all the time when I think about like running games, especially with running games that I'm being recorded and for a podcast, right? Mm-hmm. You want to keep exciting or you want to like, oh, we're getting to the hour mark. Where's my two guys that burst into the door and for the cliffhanger? Or just sort of when I'm running home games and stuff like that. Oh, it's, you know, getting to be about 45 minutes into the session when nothing really has happened yet, you know, things are a little airy. What's going to be my two guys? You know, so yeah. And I think it's very appropriate with noir that that's noir, and you know, we're trying to be as noir as possible with Murder in Metal City. My sort of next question is in general for like, you know, we talked about the beginning, you know, just sort of introducing people to first level. And first level, and especially with, you know, Pathfinder, Starfinder, isn't just one session. It's often multiple sessions. And so when you're thinking about taking someone from first level to second level, this is mainly to you, Ron, your percentage of what XP comes from fights and what XP maybe just comes from story stuff and other challenges, you know, chases and researches and whatnot that can give XP. Like what do you think is the best practices for that?
Well, I've now worked for the companies that are at both ends of that, where D&D has as its sort of one of its core mantras is you are level one for one play session and then you are level two, right? And that's it.
Okay. Yeah.
And then Pathfinder, which has every level requires the same amount of XP, whether that level is 1 or 10 or 19, it is the same amount of XP to advance. And so it's the same amount of stuff to advance. And at the risk of, I don't know, irritating both my current and former employers, right? I don't think either is right. I feel like it ought to be somewhere around 3 to 4 sessions. Frankly, I feel like the society play kind of has that right, you know, where it's generally three sessions of play. I don't think that you need very much, I don't think you need very much story XP to advance. I would think that anytime you're playing, you want to have half to two thirds be from fights. I think that's just as true at first level. But I'm not, maybe not, I'm interested to hear what John's preference on this would be. I'm not great, and here's why. Not only have I regularly used milestone leveling for like the last 20 years of running stuff,
sure,
but I don't even formally do milestone leveling anymore. It's just kind of vibes, right? It's like, oh, this feels like a thing that is kind of big. Yeah, you've learned a lot. Level yourselves up for the next session, I guess.
It's still milestone leveling. It's just that the milestone is not necessarily set in stone.
That's true.
You know, right? Because
mile muddling.
That's mile. I mean, because it depends on whether or not you're running anything that is pre-written or if you're just making stuff. Yeah. You know, you're running your own campaign. It doesn't have to be set in stone. Right, you just played three or four sessions, level up, and this felt like a big thing. Or I mean, you could have it. You know, as soon as they defeat the boss at the end of the mine, that's they should level up, and that, you know, you can go with that ahead of time.
Yeah, but John, what do you think?
What do I think? In terms of
first level play only, what do you think is the reasonable percentage of XP? Over however many sessions, whether it's milestone or not, what's a reasonable amount of XP to come from actual straight up fights? And I assume I'm going to spin off on Jason, and I'm going to assume that hazards, for example, would be in that.
Oh, sure. Yes.
Versus role playing XP, which would include victory point subsystems and things like that. What percentage do you think is right?
Well, in society play, it's roughly 60-40 is what it seems like. 60 from combat-y stuff, and then 40-ish from skill-y stuff is what it feels like. I like 50-50, and it's only because as a GM now, I've been getting a lot more enjoyment out of kind of narrative role-play stuff, in particular, and as a player as well. And it used to be, I really liked the combat-y stuff a lot more. It's like, okay, let's get through this and get to the combat. But I like the role play a lot. So if I were choosing, I would say 50-50. In practice, I think it's more two-thirds, one-thirds, or maybe 60-40.
Fighting and overcoming
hazards, yeah.
The killin' versus the skillin'. I think there's something to that. And I think that part of the issue is that at first level in a lot of systems, and even Pathfinder, Starfinder even are this way, it's easy to not feel very effective. And you don't want to have your one fight at first level be the one where you felt like you were just rolling badly and you just weren't very effective. A few fights at first level makes you really feel like, okay, here's what my character does versus...
Yeah, you got to get used to that.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, so something really kind of easy early on to ease you into it, and then a more moderate thing. I mean, if in society, it's typically you have a skill thing, you might have an easy battle, or... a social encounter, and then you'll have the main battle at the end, right? Especially now that they're a little bit shorter. One of the things I noticed, I was doing a conversion for Legendary Games, and it was for converting it over to Pathfinder 2nd Edition, and I was tracking all the XP for everything, and it's virtually like they weren't assigning XP hardly at all for any skill or social stuff. It was just encounter after encounter after encounter. It was just so many encounters, you know, for a three level, basically AP, you know? And I was like, wow, this is way more than I would have written into it.
You would have put a lot more story rewards and that kind of thing in there.
I think I would have more story rewards because there is a lot of story in there, but not a lot of story rewards. It's almost like here's story information for you, but you got to keep going forward through all these encounters and stuff. And thematically, you know, trying to tie all the encounters together with what's going on. And I can see on one hand where that would be enjoyable, but this was for kind of medium level, right? Where you have all your abilities and you want to go exercise them all now. But for low levels, especially if you have back-to-back encounters, you just die. You know, you unless you get a chance to heal or rest up or get your spells back or whatever, if you have back-to-back encounters, you're just going to die.
You know, it is funny to me. Yeah. Now, I'm not going to pan my camera down to my desk, but I will tell you right here on my desk, I am in development of a Pathfinder side scenario, which, just as you were saying, John, it starts with some skills and kind of a skill scene, and then a low difficulty fight, and then a puzzle, and then the moderate difficulty fight at the end. Just like you said, yeah. I'm like, oh, yep, that is the way we do things. And this is a level one to two, but like a level one thing where we're intending to introduce people that way. So yeah, you've got it. Yeah. You pegged it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I do agree with you, John, that it should be around, it feels like it should be around 50, 50, 60, 40. Just because I mean, as much as I say this and how much I get, what happens when I end up writing an adventure, right? But I feel like because something you just need to fill space and the words and fill XP, but like fights should be a little bit, every fight should have meaning to it.
Right.
You know,
right.
Like it is,
I think so.
Whether or not it's the, here's the introductory fight that helps you learn what your characters are, to the, here's the boss fight. Right. Those are the easy poles of the meaning, but like everyone should like learn a little something, know a little bit of something else, mm-hmm. find out about this, whether, you know, and granted, sometimes you just have to fill a dungeon and have a room full of spiders and it's just a room full of spiders. Right. But like, I would love any other, basically like other types of games that I try to run, anything that is a sort of a fight encounter that could end in something like death should have a meaning behind it in some way, you're fighting someone who's going to give you the information to do this, that, or you got someone to get something away from them. Or it's just like in the middle of this fight, you're learning that the bad guy uses undead because here are a bunch of undead. Like it has a little, mm-hmm. gotta have a little something behind it.
Oh, that's a good point. You're actually talking about two different, when you say meaning, you mean two things. There's actually meaning within the narrative of the game or meaning within the training of the characters, right?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, I think it's, as long as it's one of those two things, I think it's effective in the story.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. I think kind of along those lines, you know, I'm designing something that's higher level, but one of the things I try to do with the encounters is to have a background narrative as to why these particular creatures, and that the players can discover something after defeating these creatures, which becomes a useful bit of knowledge for later on. It's kind of foreshadowing something that's coming later on, you know, rather than just randomly encountering, you know, you encounter five giants up here and five ogres over here, you know, six bugbears over here. And there's no real connection as to why they're all even here kind of thing versus, some other creature has taken over these creatures' normal habitat. That's why they're forced up here attacking, folks and stuff when they normally wouldn't be kind of thing.
They've got motivation.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah. Foreshadowing is great, is one of those things I was talking about, you know, for a meaning to the encounter, this main kind of foreshadowing something else.
Yeah.
To speak about that, just vaguely, that this just 100% reminds me of at least the first couple levels of Abomination Vaults, right, Ron? Like you go into the castle and there's a bunch of Mitflits and they were kicked out from the level below by the Morrigh, who were kicked out from the level below that. But
that's right. Just sort of got, like stacks. It all keeps kicking. And there was a real feeling kind of going through there that this is like the fall of Rome, right? Where the Vandals came in because they had been displaced by a group that had been displaced by a different group that was, everything just sort of gets pushed in a direction where suddenly it's a problem. It may be a little blue-skinned problem as the case in Abomination Vault.
But I got to say, Ron, that led the group that I was running for into a little bit of trouble because they kept wanting to solve the problem as they went, and they hadn't done enough encounters to level up to essentially to get to the next level. So they were a little low. They were always just a little bit behind because they kept charging forward to.
Oh, they didn't do a whole level of clears. Yeah,
They didn't want to clear levels. Yeah,
this is what modern adventure has trained people to do, and I actually kind of love it. It really doesn't work sometimes when you're doing like a classic dungeon, or the thing I'm running up at Kamino is a lot of like old school. We're doing Expedition to the Barrier Peaks right now. And why are these monsters here? Because to get bashed, that's why you put monsters in dungeons, to get smashed up. And so my players are like, oh, we want to solve these problems. This was a particularly big problem when we were doing Before the Lost City. They're like, oh, there's all these different factions and we want to work out things between the factions. I'm like, they're just different groups to beat up, right? Or maybe a friend long enough for them to tell you, hey, go beat this other group up, right? So I think that the natural pull towards getting a narrative out of the combat encounters that people have, even at very low level, says something about how people have been trained to see the story behind the role-playing games that they're playing. And my opinion is that it says something very good, right? People are like, I want some narrative heft to these things, that it puts it incumbent upon us as writers, John, as you were just talking about. I feel like I have to put some narrative heft behind the reasons for these combats. Why giants versus ogres versus bugbears, right? There's got to have a reason. Great. Yeah, because players want to see it.
I think it's. I always consider it's a very human thing to want to read story into anything. Mm-hmm. Like they want you. It makes things make sense. And we all as 99.9% of people want things to basically make sense. When they see what seems to maybe be a random series of events, and like, that can't be a random series of events. No. But like, you know, yeah, but also 8 times out of 10, whatever's happening is essentially a random series of events or such a weirdly complicated coincidence that is narratively life is narratively unsatisfying.
you might be onto something there. Yeah.
All right. Well, I think we've strayed a little bit past just first level, but
sure. Yeah.
Yeah. But I think it's all good design stuff. And it's, we can come back to this probably later and maybe hit differences between moderate level and high level as well.
Because I think a lot of these answers are the same, but the answers that are different are different for, I think, some really good reasons. So, let's circle back on this.
Yeah, I think so as well. Yeah. All right. Well, I'm John.
And I'm Ron.
And I'm Jason. And this has been Digital Divination.